My name's Elijah, and welcome to the Roots Hospitality Podcast.
Yes, chef! Yes. One. Here we go.
Welcome to episode 55 with Rebecca Hawkes.
The unfortunate part of this, not the school, but that they're planning on building a road that goes through the garden to the school. So half the garden is going to be like,
oh no,
cut in half. Yeah. But that's been the plan for many years, and it hasn't happened yet. So they have these chimneys on this side, and they have chimneys on the other side.
Yeah.
And their aim is to be sucking up all the carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide from the road here in the tunnel. But they do a shit job. So, because it's not good for the kids to be breathing in all this carbon monoxide and dioxide, they have to keep delaying the school plans. So it keeps getting delayed and delayed. And in the meantime, we're like, fuck it. Let's just keep growing until we can't grow anymore. We're at least the part of the garden that I'm a part of. We're a bit of the guerrilla gardeners because they told everyone you can't have an allotment section here anymore because the road's coming. And I made friends with the people that were like, fuck it. We're going to keep growing. Like, let's just do it until we can't anymore. Why not?
Yeah. It's sick. It's just like, it's not a spot that I expected when we were walking down here. I'm like, you don't expect to have something so cool and unique and different in the spot. So it's cool that you can grow so much here in such a... Yeah. Because I walked here thinking it was like an industrial area.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think you could grow much here. Yeah. But you come here and it's just like blossoming.
It is.
Incredible.
And we're kind of bringing this diversity to the area. The part of the garden I'm a part of is called Mangfoldshagen, which Mangfolds means diversity. So we're trying to build more of like a food forest, and we're using a lot of perennials that we're just going to keep growing each time so that we're not keep releasing the carbon from the soil by redigging into it. Mm. So we're trying to build up things that will last over many years, or if that place is to be demolished, we can move those plants to other areas. But this place is pretty much run by volunteers. Mm. Where shall I start my tour of the garden?
Let's go for gold.
Let's go this way and I can show. There's a member of my part of the garden called Amjad, and he's from Iran, Iraq, and he has a background in horticulture and is just very knowledgeable on plants in general.
Yep.
So he's been building like a food forest over here. So this was an unused area of the land. And you can see it's kind of like a trash pit. And he's planting like walnut trees and a lot of fruit trees and bushes in this area. Yeah, the biggest one that we have here is over here, which is, that was the grape trap plant actually.
Yeah.
These are walnuts. And the biggest one that we had is like 2 or 3 years. But this one, not that one. That's grapes, that's walnut. And so we've still got a few years to wait and hopefully they're still gonna be here by that point. There's always the problem because this place is open. That's a benefit, but also, I think you can walk through here. It's a benefit, but also a problem in terms of things get stolen.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. You have the other way of doing it, which is what's common in England, for instance, where I'm from, where you have allotments and they're locked, which means everything is safe, nothing's getting stolen, but it's not open to the public and no one can come see it, and that's a real shame.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're locked, but this one's open. Dun dun dun.
Wow. Holy shit.
And it's warm. It's beautiful here. Usually they're locked up because people stealing things.
Holy shit. Sorry, I'm going to be taking a lot of photos.
This
is so beautiful. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So are these... Cucumbers?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you can see like little ones here.
Yeah.
I think they're more of the pickling type.
How many would you roughly expect to get out of here?
I have no idea, you know. I did not plant these. This is more of the city farmer project, but I would imagine quite a lot, actually. With the, if you see how many flowers there are.
Yeah.
I think there would be a lot.
So what happens to a lot of the produce that you're growing?
In here is tomatoes.
Oh, beautiful. So with I dare say this would be like the community garden.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to a lot of the produce that you're growing here?
So because this is part of Oslo Kommune, so it's run by the municipality.
Yeah.
What happens is we can't sell any of the food for profit. Sometimes we do get people come by and they're like, hey, can we buy some vegetables? Is this like a pick your own kind of situation where you pay a certain amount of money and you can pick a certain amount of produce? And we say no. What you can do though is you can come volunteer and you can come donate your time, and in exchange for your time and your energy you can have food. That's the way we work.
Sure.
So we don't sell any of the produce that we create, but we have every Wednesday dugnad.
Yeah.
And dugnad is a Norwegian word, which is a really beautiful word in that it means everyone coming together for a community project to serve a better purpose. So you can have dugnads in your apartment building, and everyone gets together to tidy up the apartment building or tidy up the land around the apartment building. And it's very much in Norwegian culture to have this dugnad.
Yeah.
To the point that when it was COVID, they even said, like, this is a national dugnad to, like, look after each other as a community.
Sure.
So we have dugnad here at Leseter every Wednesday. And then people can come from, I think it's like 4 in the afternoon until 7 in the evening, and help, like, weed the land and nourish the land. And then in exchange, we all make a dinner together and share the food that's created.
Some staff meal.
Mm-hmm.
Like the good old days.
Yeah, so it's usually like a big soup and bread and salads and super beautiful what's growing here.
I mean, also, I guess with you being a chef, that would help shaping your perspective on how to grow, what to grow, and what you expect to get out of the crops that you're growing, because you know what it's like to be on the other side of, you know, produce and farming and being the receiving end as a chef. Mm-hmm. How do you think that's changed from being a chef to now a farmer, in terms of if you were to be a chef now, the not the leniency, but what you're more forgiving of? Because as a chef, you would expect a certain level of quality for your restaurant, but now being a farmer, you really understand the process and the realities of growing produce in different climates. So I'm curious, just like now being on both sides of that stick, how that's changed your perspective on the importance of the produce that you get, and why a high standard of quality is such an impossible expectation. Do you know what I mean?
I do, but it's a big question.
It's a huge question.
To answer, and I can kind of tackle it from different perspectives. I can go down the line of the reason that I'm a chef is because I've been vegan 10 years. And 10 years ago was so little available that I could eat. Like, going into being vegan, it was like tofu, salad. I would go to dinner parties, people were like, oh, so you just eat salad.
No one
didn't realize what veganism really was 10 years ago and what you could do with it. So because I had these limitations placed on me within this box, it meant that I have to be more creative.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about vegan cooking, is that it makes you so much more creative. Because instead of, I'm going to add cream to this dish, well, what else can I use that's creamy? Maybe I'm going to soak cashews. Maybe I'm going to use banana, but then it's got a banana flavor. Maybe I'm going to have avocado.
So you get
more creative within that space. And so when I think it comes to them working with the produce, it's super interesting to me to then be stuck almost with what's seasonally available.
Yeah.
So then you have the limitations of like, oh wow, we've got so many beans all of a sudden. What do I do with beans?
Yeah.
And instead of that being a problem, that becomes a creative opportunity of like, okay, now I'm going to really learn all the possibilities of using beans.
Yeah.
Or maybe this season, say the tomatoes didn't work and I was expecting to be able to use tomatoes.
Sure.
But hey, our beetroot did incredible. Yeah. So now let's shift focus and then work with the beetroot. Or maybe all the crops failed and like, oh, fuck, what are we going to do? But the nettles have grown.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to use nettles and I can use what's foraged. So yes, of course, it's nice to go into creating a dish with like, I can do anything. But for me, actually, I find it more interesting and creatively constructive to have these limitations and to work with what's seasonal and what's available now than have all the opportunities open to me in the world, because I think working from the background of being a vegan chef already, I'm used to working with limitations.
Yeah.
And so I'm not super worried about not having what produce I was expecting to have.
Yeah. I think it reminds me of a restaurant called La Pege.
Okay.
Which is, I think it was a one Michelin star restaurant.
Mm.
And it went vegetarian in the 90s. Mm. And then this is a huge deal because going from just a regular Michelin to a vegetarian in the 90s, you know, everyone was expecting it to lose its hat, but it still retained. But what they would do was the owner, head chef, would just bring a box of produce every day, and it would just be a different bit of produce every day, and the menu would change every day because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'd like bring his van from the local farm, and he'd drop it off to the chefs and go, all right, we've got peaches, we're going to make a peach tart today. And they would go, yep, no worries, we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
Or he'd go, beetroots and all this sort of stuff. And they would just, every day would be something a little different. And the chefs would just be that skilled or that passionate to figure out a way to make it on the menu by the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of exciting as well, which I think I can sense that excitement.
It is exciting, but then you really have to be like on your toes.
On your toes,
and you have to be used to working in that way. So it's a different way of being.
Yeah.
This is my friend.
Yeah.
Fran is working a lot with the plants and herbs.
Hello. Oh, beautiful.
So we show how to spin
nettles. Oh, there we go. I remember reading that. Yeah.
So what do you mean spinning nettles? Like into yarn or?
Yes,
okay.
Making like a
wow.
Wow. I want to learn to do this.
So it's really cool.
So how do you go from being, how do you take
I
it from?
I will show it.
Yeah.
Cool. Shall I continue the tour?
And let's do it.
Feel free to ask me any questions if you wonder about anything. This is one of my favorite plants ever.
Nasturtiums?
Yeah.
I love them. Mm. I love them. Yeah. I recently had a menu in, I did a pop-up in Sydney.
Uh-huh.
It was like a small 10-seater vegan omakase I did.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the dishes I made was like a nasturtium pesto.
Yeah.
So take you like you would a regular pesto, but just blitz up that with some spinach oil and then toast hemp seeds and fold that through.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a really nutty, peppery, spicy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Crunchy, and I serve that with roasted eggplant and kelp.
I've done a pesto just with the flowers.
And so just with the flowers?
With the flowers. So you end up with this bright orange or bright red pesto.
Oh, whoa, that's clever.
Which is
I was like, I didn't have enough flowers. I only dried them and put them on as like a garnish, but I didn't have enough flowers to give that a go. But
so that's
really
the benefit of being here, because so many things grow and you have so much potential. And actually, before I go to the cafe space where I currently am working, I'm dropping by here in the morning to collect edible flowers to decorate the dishes or the cakes with. So it's super nice to have this facility where I can just drop by and grab things that I need. This is one of my favorite plants because of course you can eat every single part.
It's so good.
Have you made the flowers into salt and also into a sugar? So then you have this thing that messes with your mind because you have the peppery taste, but then with the sweetness of the sugar and it's orange and it's like, what is this? So this is our orchard. So we've got a bunch of different fruit trees here. I wonder if this is ready. Not really.
Wow, so what's growing here?
So you have a lot of apple trees and these are, I think, plum, but they're not ready yet. But yeah, it doesn't look like this year was so successful on the apples and the pears, to be honest. But previously, there's been so much that we can then use for making apple cider vinegar. I have a friend, the one Amjad, who made this food forest over the back.
Sure.
He had a project where him and friends of his, he's a dentist. Him and his friends, the dentist, they went all around Oslo collecting fruit from trees, from very heritage old trees, hundreds of years old, collecting all these different variants of apples and pears. And then they had them in a big, and in a crock pot thing on their balcony. And they made apple cider vinegar and they made pear cider vinegar.
Oh man.
And the best vinegar I've ever tried. Like so amazing that I have tried not to be using it. Because it's just such a beautiful product and it's made here in Oslo.
So I
want to do it again with them this year. And the thing can be in the city that so many people that have, they have these beautiful fruit trees in their gardens, but they don't have the time to pick the produce from them because they're so focused on this 9-to-5 working thing. That I live in an area of the city where people have a lot of money and they have these beautiful gardens with fruit trees and then no one picks the fruit. And they just goes to waste. So my idea is to go to them and say, hey, can I pick your apples? And in exchange, I will make apple jam or I'll make something with it.
Yeah.
And I will give you some.
Sure.
In exchange. So that's my plan.
That's awesome.
This field is, I think they've done a Free Sisters variation. Do you know about the Free Sisters?
No.
So it's a Native American way of growing, which the Free Sisters are the free plants that work together in order to provide the right composites of nitrogen and carbon in the soil in order to benefit each other. So each member of these Free Sisters are helping each other to grow to their best and also use the space in the best way. So you have corn that grows up and you have beans that grow up around the corn. And then you have along the ground, you have squash, pumpkins, butternut squash, courgette. So in a short space, you can grow a lot of plants, a lot of food. And all of them give each other different, what is it called? Like nutrients that benefit the growing of each plant. So in here, we also have sunflowers all around the edges. The problem has been though that all the corn usually gets stolen.
Stolen?
Yes.
Really?
I'm surprised more of these pumpkins haven't got stolen. Because that can be the problem sometimes, and you put all this love and energy into growing this plant, and then it gets stolen. You're like, fuck, I was hoping, you know, like I was waiting one week more.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what, just as in people come from outside and just, really? Is that a common thing here?
Yeah, it is a common thing here because it's, I think different cultures, people don't realize that that's not the right thing to be doing. So it's a bit of a tricky one, and we've had to go up to people and say, you can come and you can volunteer and you can invest your energy and then you can take, but you can't just come and take. And sometimes we have a problem with people coming with big bin liners and just stepping all over into the plants and just taking huge amounts, and they might be walking on different plants in the meantime and kind of ruining the garden and not giving back to it.
That's sad.
It is. But the alternative is that we were to lock it up, the garden. And that's not what we want at all, because we want people to engage with the plants. We want them to learn about the space. We want people to come in
and we
want to welcome them in. And, you know, they're always so surprised when they come to the bakehouse and we're like, yeah, come in. We're going to give you food. We're going to give you coffee. And they're like, do we have to pay? We're like, no, just come in. Be part of this, because us volunteers, we love the place so much because it's given us so much that we want to give back to others, and we want other people to realize, like, wow, this is amazing that we can do this in the city and we can be part of community and we can share all of this nature. So we don't mind people taking some, but only in exchange if they're going to come and spend their energy and invest in their space as well. So we will pass the compost, which is all there, and they're doing a lot of hot compost processing. Do you know about the hot compost compared to the cold?
Oh, sorry, no, I don't really say hot and cold, no.
So you have the hot compost and the cold compost, and the hot compost maybe takes like 2 weeks to be ready, whereas the cold takes 2 years.
Sure.
So the hot compost is amazing in that you can layer nitrogen, carbon, and it creates an anemorphic, I think I'm saying correct, process where the bacteria in there is creating a lot of heat. So the temperatures can go up to 70, 80 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah. So you would burn yourself if you put your...
So is that naturally...
Yeah, it's naturally occurring.
So explain what are the elements of this nitrogen carbon? Like, what is it that you're putting in there?
So for instance, if you want the carbon, then you could be using all the dried material. So you're using the straw, the hay, and then the nitrogen, you're using the fresh cut grass. So you have fresh to dry combination
and
in the layering.
And that together creates the...
Yeah, creates this, I don't know if I'm saying it right, the anemorphic, this heat combination to reach these temperatures. So you do actually have Michelin star restaurants that have used this. I think Blue Hills.
Dan Barber.
Yeah.
I saw him do this. Yeah.
So with the poaching of the eggs...
And there was like leeks and stuff he was cooking as well. That's crazy.
But there has been controversy about it because... In that restaurant, they said it was always like poached egg in this compost heap, but it wasn't always working because sometimes, yes, it can get to 70, 80 degrees, but not always if it hasn't been layered correctly. So they came up with some criticism because sometimes they were pre-poaching the eggs in the kitchen and then finishing them off in the compost.
Sure.
And not explaining that to people that came to eat, like it was partially cooked in there. In the kitchen. But it's cool that you can think about like processes like that that happen in the garden and how can that influence what you're cooking.
Yeah.
How can I use this and harness this potential to create something that hasn't been done before, or you can interpret this in a different way.
It's certainly clever.
It's very smart. So here's lots of St. John's wort, which is great in wintertime. You've got the hollyhocks, which is edible flowers that I'm using on plants, on dishes.
Being here in Oslo City, with the temperatures going from today being quite beautiful, it's sunny, it's like a typical day in Australia for any good farmer where it's just really beautiful. But also in the winter time, you get the opposites of just across the road, that water will freeze up and you can go ice skating on it. Which therefore means that this farm would be basically non-usable, which reminds me of like the restaurant Farviken that Magnus Nilsson would run. So he was saying that for their farm, they would grow it for 6 months of the year and then take it and have to pickle it, preserve it in all sorts of ways. Would that be something you would have to do here?
This is something that we've done here before and it's so beautiful. I'm planning a fermentation and pickling workshop in the next month or so here because when we had this before, we harvested everything.
Yep.
And we took this into the bakehouse and then I made a huge pickling brine and we had everyone around the table
pickling stuff.
And it was at 9 in the evening, darkness, we're in the center of Oslo, and I've got people around a table that are like, hand me the coriander seeds, hand me the peppercorns. And everyone's so exciting, like stuffing their jars with spices and plants. And this is something that we used to do. This is something that we used to do as communities, come together to do the harvest and then preserve it for the winter months.
Yeah.
And it's something that we've stopped doing. And instead, we're filling supermarkets with salads and strawberries in December. And that's not what we should be doing sustainability-wise or, in my belief, what's healthy for our bodies. So it's something that I really think should be brought back and should be used. And that's what we tend to do here, that we try to preserve what we can. So now we've just had the months of berry season in Norway. So we've been making a lot of jams. We've been making a lot of soft, like cordial.
Yep.
And dehydrating the berries and just trying to preserve what we can when we can, because yes, winter is coming and in Norway there's not so much available.
How big is this farm here, just out of the space that you're using here roughly?
I have no idea. I don't know, but maybe we can find out
I'm just curious, just hectares wise
I don't know.
Because it's a big community garden, like I'm just trying to imagine, I'm trying to compare it to something, but I would say it's from this back wall to where we walked is maybe about 60-70 meters.
It's going to get bigger when we go around the corner. And if you're thinking about that, there's only 2 employed people here that get paid to run this place, and the rest is volunteer help.
Because I'm just imagining for like a restaurant, if you were to...
Is this asparagus? So they're going to seed. If it was for a restaurant, like I think if it was run for a restaurant possibility, you would have a lot more produce that was able to be built, be produced. But because this is more like a artistic project, a community project, it's not created with that in mind because you don't have enough people working the land to secure it. But what they are able to do is produce a whole bunch of things with what we have, which is great. So now we're finishing what's the end of Lysetter and what becomes Mangfoldshagen. So this is the part of the garden that I'm a part of. And so this area was the allotments. So you can still see a lot of the what we call parcels, the boxes, the allotment boxes. And they were allotted to people that would pay money every month, every year, something like this. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, from what I know, I never rented one myself. But here in Oslo, there's such a demand for it. Like, if you want an allotment in Oslo, you have to be on a waiting list for 10 to 15 years. Yeah. It's that much wanted in the city to have land and be able to grow land.
Like this?
Mm-hmm.
Far out.
Yeah. And so people were very lucky to have these boxes here and be able to rent them. But what would happen was when you would come to it, you would just look after your one area of land and you would maybe say hi to your neighbor, like, oh, yeah, good to see you, blah, blah, blah. But it wouldn't be so much of a community thing. You just look after your one box.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So since they told everyone that owned an allotment here, no more growing, we're going to put a road mainly through our part of the garden.
Yeah.
And so everyone was told you can't be growing. Friends of mine, people that I made friends with, were the ones that were like, fuck it, we're going to keep growing until we can no longer grow. Until they build the road, we're just going to keep on going.
Yeah,
so we don't pay any money to be doing this.
Yeah.
And that's why and we then hold it out and be open to everyone to use. And so when we're growing, we're sharing everything.
Yeah.
So if we're going to water the garden, we water everyone's. And then when we harvest, we share out everything.
Yeah, yeah.
One of our members is an architect, so we had him help us build this greenhouse using windows that we got reclaimed. And someone's obviously been sleeping in here.
That's awesome.
Recently we did up all of this so that we could be growing the tomato plants. And these are all tomato plants I started at home in my own tiny apartment windows and are now growing here. And last week it was my birthday, so we had a little party in this greenhouse, like 8 people, because it rained. Just like in here.
A mini rave, perhaps?
Yeah, we put on music and we're just like dancing, rain coming down. But there's the most... So these tomatoes I grew from buying a beautiful tomato.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, oh, they're stunning. I bought a beautiful tomato and then harvested all the seeds from them. And then, from one seed you get this amazing plant.
Mm.
And then from... You have to see these tomatoes. From friends of mine who run a place, they gave me some seeds. So we have these cherry tomatoes. We also have some black tomatoes around the garden.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which are great. I've used in curries and Thai food because they like suck up the flavor.
Wow.
Oh.
That's crazy.
I would say you could take one home for seeds and plant in Australia, but I think you're... you get stuck by the CSR people, or you know, it's customs because you're not allowed to take seeds in.
Right? That's so nice.
Mm.
So soft and just collapses in your mouth. Mm.
But the thing is, we're picking them when they're not even quite ready because once they turn red, they will go so fast because someone will come and take them.
That's crazy. But that's delicious as it is. Like, even just pickling that would just be like, oh, man. Pickled tomatoes, man.
Yeah. Or we pickle them if they're green.
So underrated. Oh, man. Tell me about it.
Mm. So here is very wild.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of us are better at gardening than others. And to be honest, I've been a bit of a shit gardener this year because I was working in a guest house hotel as a chef in June.
Oh, yeah.
Which meant I was out of the city. I was in an area of Norway called Hardanger.
Yeah.
And June for growing in Norway is kind of essential. It's the best month to be planting out. And there's kind of an unwritten rule that in Norway, their national day, their national constitution day, is May 17th. And there's kind of an unwritten rule that you should plant out your seeds after May 17th. That's when usually the frost is gone. It's not going to get below zero at nighttime.
Yeah.
So that's when you can start planting things out. But up until that point, it's very difficult to. You have to start growing indoors first. So here you have the black tomatoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Here.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Is that the black Russians? Is that black, the black Russian tomato?
Yeah, I think so. You can take... They're very like... the nice things with these are people won't pick them because they don't realize what they are. They don't notice them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we get to keep them a bit more for ourselves. So sometimes we're picking variants to grow by what we know is less likely to be stolen.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Well, when we were growing a lot of pumpkins, we would hide the pumpkins with hay because when you see something bright orange, people automatically notice it.
Uh-huh.
But if you like, hide it, then they won't go searching. They don't recognize the leaves of the plant. They only recognize the fruit of the plant.
Yeah.
So yeah, this garden's pretty wild. I built this teepee a while ago, and they're green inside.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And I put this in Thai food, and they soak up all the flavors so that when you get this in your dish, it's like pow, because it like really soaks it up.
I've never had a fucking black Russian tomato before.
But yeah, I would suggest you could take the seeds from it and then grow your own next year, but I don't think you're allowed to do that.
That's crazy. She's so pretty.
Me and gardener's friends, we've had like brunches where we have these beautiful tomatoes we've acquired.
Yeah.
And then we're sitting there with like coffee filters taking out the seeds and like trying to dry them out ready for next year. I built this teepee 1 year for to be an area where you could go pee because we don't have a bathroom here. And the idea that it could be peas and beans growing around the side because there's a lot of nitrogen in urine and therefore the beans and peas can reuse this in order to grow strong.
Yeah.
So it's my teepee tent. it's a bit neglected though, and this tree is taken over. And then on this area, Amjad again, he's put plastic underneath areas of the walkway so that water can run down and water itself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this part of the garden, because we don't have a necessarily leader, and a lot of us, myself included, we're just learning as we're doing.
Yeah.
I'm not educated in being a farmer or a grower or horticulturist or any of this.
Yeah.
But I'm learning by being here and from each other. So we're testing out things, we're growing, like for instance, in black boxes that we got from the construction site because they add heat to the soil so we can start the seeds earlier. We're testing out, can we even grow this in Norway? Can we try and grow mushrooms in the greenhouse? Can we try and grow a pineapple? Was one person's idea. Didn't work, but lemongrass worked. So we're testing out a lot of things here, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't, but then we find out. Mm. We built this kitchen one evening, like at 10 at night in the darkness, because one member brought this sink. And then we're like, okay, let's build a kitchen so that when we have our dugnans, we can come together and cook. So this area is the idea that you can put your vegetables on here and wash them with the hose.
So
and then
funny.
You have beans growing up the side.
As a chef, what do you think the biggest things you've learnt taking on and looking after your own farm?
It's a lot of work, for sure. It's a lot of work. And I'm always learning new stuff from other growers, how you can combine growing the plants, for instance, different uses for them from people that have different backgrounds.
Yeah.
So for instance, Fran, who we met, because she has this background in herbalism, she is able to tell me more about the medicinal uses of this plant. And then I'm able to reinterpret that into, okay, that's interesting. How can I build that into a dish to make someone feel a certain way? How can I use that information and reinterpret it into food as an ingredient, but still have the potency of the energetics of that herb, of the emotions that it might make someone feel.
Sure.
So it's very inspiring to be here and be able to share all that information and what I know, but also from what they know, and always be building on that. When I was first coming here, I didn't know very much at all. And because half the garden is being demolished, I could walk around and pull up plants. And so I learned, like, oh, that's what a parsnip looks like above ground, you know, because yeah. you only see what grew below ground.
Sure.
And so, oh, I didn't realize that's what it looks like above ground. Okay, that's interesting. And actually, you have to be careful because with parsnips, it has photosensitive, not really flowers, but the part that grows up can, if it touches your skin and then you get exposed to the sun, it can burn you, for instance. So you learn a lot of things like this. Compost.
Yeah, right. So is this a combination of also just a little bit of added soil as well? Or is
No,
this...
it's just become like this.
Really?
Yeah.
So just all the dry. So this is just all the dry mm-hmm. stuff that's
just... So
they're
just... drying it out here before it ends up being in the compost. And then you can see when they've stuck a thermometer in it.
That's crazy.
It gets really hot. Now, where that's I was awesome. Now in Haranga, we also were doing the hot compost.
Yeah.
And sometimes the compost was warmer than the sauna.
Wow. That's insane.
Which makes you think, could you somehow build a sauna that's then heated by compost?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or something like this. Or I've known of cabins where they're built the water pipes into the compost so that you can have hot water.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of smart solutions.
That's crazy. I love that. So where else were you chefing? To touch back into the chef days, where else were you chefing? And how long, or when did you start, I suppose?
I was in Norway for 6 years, and then I decided to leave and see other places. I ended up in Iceland first, and working, volunteering on this place called Spirit Farm. And there, they had a little garden and not much of a farm, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I was there as a volunteer, and I love cooking. So I would cook for everyone, cook big meals for all the volunteers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I left, I was traveling all over the world and doing a lot of volunteer work in exchange for accommodation or food.
Sure.
And in those situations, like I lived in Istanbul for a month with a yoga teacher and I was cooking for her every day. And I was learning Ayurvedic techniques of cooking food because of the information she was able to give me.
What's Ayurvedic?
It's maybe 5,000 to 10,000 year old Indian traditional way of medicine and health, which is based upon the elements, similar to Chinese medicine. Mm. And so you look at the disposition of someone and how much elements they have of pitta, vata, kapha, which are three elements, and how much of these dispositions you have, and therefore what you should be eating, consuming, living, what kind of rituals you should be doing in order to be more in balance.
Right.
Yes. So I was making food with this information. And
What would be an example of, like, based off these elements, what you'd have to cook for someone?
I can get into that. So should we sit for a sec?
Yeah.
So for myself, I can be a quite floaty person. I have a lot of vata in me, which is more like the air, ethereal elements. And from this, because I can be an airy person, I have a lot of ideas, I have a lot of creativity. I also need to be grounded. I also need to be rooted in order to get anything done.
Sure.
And if you look to the season that I'm going to be more floaty and airy is a season with a lot of wind.
Right.
Because if you have a lot of wind, that can make you feel even more like, I have no feet on the ground.
Right.
I'm just floating around. So in that instance, you want to be eating more grounding foods. So I feel a lot more balanced and more at peace when I'm eating root vegetables, for instance, or warm food. That's what works for me. Whereas someone else that has a lot of water in them might need, and so they feel quite heavy,
sure.
they need more like salads, light flavors, light dishes in order to feel more in balance. Whereas they wouldn't do so well with thicker, creamier, fattier products because they're already feeling way down.
Right.
If that makes sense.
That's interesting. Yeah. I love that.
It's similar to Chinese medicine where you have cold and hot dispositions. And then in Chinese medicine, you're looking to the idea of okay, if someone has an illness and it's an illness that's created by heat, but in their body they already have too much heat, you would prescribe a plant that's going to be cooling in order to deal with that. But that same plant is not going to necessarily work on someone that has a cold disposition inside their body or inside their organs. So you have to work differently with different plants.
Sure.
And I like taking that information from a medicinal point of view and from a personal point of view of what people need in that moment and how you want to feel. Because one of the most incredible things I think about food is it's such an honor and privilege that I literally get to make something that builds someone else's body. Like, I'm giving you something that's going to help your blood, that's going to help your cells grow, that's going to help grow your bones, that's going to make you feel a certain way. And depending on what I put in that dish, you're going to feel something.
Sure.
And it's either going to be on a physical level of literally what this energetics of this food are doing inside your body as medicine, or it's going to be on a mental point of view of touching on emotions.
This has been beautiful.
Yeah, and if you think of any more questions or anything you want to know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, this is beautiful. I love this. Like, I was just, me and my dad were having a laugh this morning because when I started my apprenticeship as a chef, I was so into understanding about produce and farming that I asked if I could turn his whole backyard, which is probably, let's just say this courtyard here. Yeah. It was about 15 meters by 10 meters, his backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I top and turned the whole thing and just like added compost I put newspapers down, put sugar cane and then planted his whole backyard. I turned it into everything. Mm-hmm. And it took me like 3 days of shoveling just myself, of just like on my days off when I was an apprentice.
Yeah.
I turned his whole backyard and just started planting different things and just started to learn. Like, and I built an irrigation system, sprinkler. Like,
we'd love to do that here because it's such a large area.
Yeah.
It's really hard to water when it's crazy hot.
Yeah.
But yeah, you learn through doing.
I love it.
That's how it works best.
It's so nice to go through this because it just reminds me of what I was doing as an apprentice and just like picking things, tasting things, fucking things up, trying it again, and just like
the best gardeners, farmers are the ones that have like fucked up the most.
Yeah, 100%.
Because you failed and failed again.
Beautiful.
That's cool. So we're gonna learn to do this. We're gonna learn to.
Oh, we're doing it here. Oh, beautiful.
The Roots podcast is proudly supported by Sydney Direct Fresh Produce, the fruit and veg supplier led by Luke Kohler, who's provided Sydney with some of the best and local produce since he was 16 years old and still smashing it today. Thanks for tuning into today's episode. If you'd like to listen to more episodes or check out some cool behind-the-scenes photography, then head to the new website over at rootshospitality.com.au or follow Roots Hospitality on Instagram for the latest updates. Cheers!